Hello, my friends. Hello, my life warriors, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to the Day In, Day Out podcast. Woo! Today on episode 155, I was very lucky to have Ben Winter on the podcast. He is an author, speaker, actor, improvist, entrepreneur. We talked about many things. We talked about his new book, which has been out, what to expect when having expectations. We talked about how long it took him to come up with the book, get the concept out there. We also talked about how you can manage your expectations, as well as talking about many other subjects as well. I got to say, it was a delight to speak to him, and yeah, I look forward to having him get on the podcast in the near future. Please sit back, enjoy the show, and yes, don't forget, please subscribe. It does help out the actual show. And yeah, have an awesome day. Enjoy the show and be awesome. Yeah. Peace. Hello, my friends. Hello, my life warriors. Wherever you are in the world, welcome to the Day In, Day Out podcast. Woo! Today on episode 155. Oh, dear God. I now stare into the void. I have the immense pleasure of having Ben Winter on the podcast today. He is an author, speaker, actor, improvist, and entrepreneur. How are you today, sir?
I am fantastic. Thanks for having me on.
The pleasure's all mine. The pleasure's all mine. I have to say, you, sir, what can I say? You are a very active individual. Like, you are, like, when it comes to the whole podcasting circuit, you, like, not experienced. No, that's not high enough. Veteran. No, you're some type of, like, yes, I don't know, maybe possibly a sadist, but who knows? You are definitely a veteran, like a five-star veteran. How many podcasts have you done in this grand scheme of things?
It's got to be over 30 at this point.
30. Yeah. And how many do you, like, how many more do you have to go, or is this a never-ending thing?
Oh, I think it's going to be never ending. As long as there's people that can benefit from any information that I have, you know, I'll keep sharing it. So,
yeah, I hear you. Yeah. But what brings you on today to the podcast is your book, What to Expect When Having Expectations. What is your book about?
Well, not to give it away, but it's about expectations. Now, the book is, it's really about understanding where our expectations come from, why we have them.
Yeah.
And then there's those moments in life where we get upset. And the only reason we get upset is because an expectation hasn't been met. So if you can understand that, you understand where they come from, you can kind of find a path to peace and calm much more quickly. By understanding them. So,
yeah, you know what? You don't realize how ironic your book is to, like, a Brit who, like, during the Euros, while everything's going on, measure expectations. Oh, my. Look, you have no idea what weight of expectation has been failed to be met time and time again. We are Sisyphus pushing that rock up and down. Once more, again and again. So, yeah, I'm very intrigued. Help me.
I know everybody's really excited now that the streak is over. You guys have won. So,
it's not over yet. We still got at least three more games to play before, like, the final and everything like that. There's a plenty of opportunity for this to go. Let's see. It's gone well against Germany, but it can go horribly wrong against our next opposition.
It's like, yeah. Fair enough.
So help me. Help a nation.
Help a nation. Yeah. All right. No pressure at all here.
No.
So obviously, like, sports is one of those big ones where we get upset all the time because we expect that the team we're rooting for is the team that's going to win. you know, and unless we know that they've just like historically they've always lost. And, you know, we have plenty of teams here in the United States that they're just historically a team that loses, and you can just expect that they're going to have a losing season. And if they win, great. Nobody's going to be upset if they win when you're expecting them to lose. But on the other hand, you've also got those teams where you're constantly expecting them to win and always be their best. And, you know, I've been rooting for you for my entire life, so you have to win finally, because I need validation for rooting for you. And unfortunately, at the end of the day, you know, having an expectation of a team having a specific outcome, it's not a reasonable expectation. At the end, because anything can happen when it comes to sports. Yeah. And so, you know, if we can take that into account, because one of the things that I talk about in the book is I have a flow chart where I take those moments in time when you're upset and I kind of work through things to find that moment in time where you're at peace. And one of the questions is this expectation reasonable? Now, if you have a team that's been winning every game, you know, week, month, you know, just constantly winning, of course, you're going to expect them to win their next game. And when they don't, you get upset about it. You also expect when you're watching the game that the refs aren't going to do something stupid. You expect them to actually be good at their job. I mean, hey, they're reffing a big game. You expect them to be good at their job. So when they make a stupid call, you're just like, no, you're supposed to not make stupid calls, right? Mm-hmm. So, but sports is that weird one where we constantly have expectations that are completely unreasonable, because you have two professional teams playing against each other. Anything can happen. Anything.
Indeed it can. It sounds like you've got a little bit of experience in like team suffering yourself.
Yes, I do.
Okay. Who is your team?
So I live in Colorado in the United States. And so it's all the Colorado teams, like the Colorado Avalanche, which is our hockey team, got the Denver Broncos, which is our American football team. I'm going to specify that because, you know, football is known around the world by everything except what the United States decides it is, whatever. So American football team. And, you know, every now and then we'll win a championship, and then it'll be 20 years later and we're like, where's the next championship? I mean, like, come on, we were like right there. So yeah.
I hear you, but you know what, at least you're not a Knicks fan. That's a good thing.
I'm definitely not a Knicks fan.
I don't think you'll be able to stay in Colorado if you said you were.
Thank you. We've got so many people that have moved from all over the United States into Colorado. There's plenty of Knicks fans here, I'm sure.
Fair enough. But like, yeah. So what was the sort of driving force for you to actually come up with this book? Because look, expectations, yes. Apart from teams, what you expect from the day, how do you expect life to go? There are a myriad of expectations which come on a daily, weekly, monthly, year to year basis. What made you go, hey, you know what? I need to write this book.
So it's kind of backwards from what people might expect, in that I teach improv for like team building and life skills, not necessarily to be up on stage, but it's something we do every moment of every day of our lives. We improvise. So why not learn how to do it? Mm. And I kept saying, you know, the only reason anybody gets upset is because an expectation hasn't been met. And I was like, okay, that's cool. That saying works. It has depth. I don't find any flaw with it. This is great, but it doesn't solve any problems. And so that's when I sat down and I created that flow chart where it's like, okay, you're upset. This is the problem. How do we get to the solution, which is being at peace, being happy? And so I started working through this flow chart and asking all these questions. And every time that I would come up with like a no, like one of the things we have a difficult time doing as people is sharing our expectations with others. Like, hey, I expect you to do this. You know, and sometimes sharing those expectations with somebody is scary, because what if they say no? Mm. And so there's a lot of fear in not sharing those expectations. And so all of the no questions really were like, there's a lot more depth here that people need to understand. So I need to write a book that kind of encompasses all of the information around this flowchart. Because if you don't know where your expectations are coming from, when you find out you have a new one, how do you explore it? And most of the time, we don't even know we had the expectation until we're upset, which immediately, I mean, the first question I ask, did you know you had the expectation? Most of the time we're like, no, I didn't. You know, when you're a first-time parent, you've never been a parent before, you start sounding exactly like your mom and dad, and you said, I'm never going to sound like my parents. And then you open your mouth talking to your own kid, and you're like, that was my mom. Dope. I didn't want to be like my mom. But why do we do that? Because that's what we know. Those are the expectations we have, but it's all subconscious. And until it rises up and kind of stares at us in the face, we don't recognize it as such.
Yeah, I would think with, like, when you sort of mentioned parenting and like with regards to that, like, I think this is the thing. For me, it sounds like, yeah, there, we have our own expectations, but there are expectations which are put upon us, which don't actually sort of match our personalities or ideals. Like, would you say like you had to tackle any of that in the book, or was that something you just went like, I'm ignoring that, I don't know?
No, that's definitely part of it. And is so how we grow up, how our parents raise us, how, you know, what we learn at school, what we see in the little tiny system of life that we grow up in.
Yes.
Call it community, call it society, call it the TV we watch. You know, we are influenced by what we see around us as kids. And so that's how we expect the world to be as we grow up. And as you grow up, you realize the world is bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And there's more going on than we ever knew when we were a kid, because we only saw our parents and our friends and our school and occasionally what was on TV. And now, I mean, kids these days, they're exposed to the internet. You know, that's a whole world of stuff that I never had when I was a kid. My parents didn't have to deal with it. And so, you know, I have a almost 12-year-old, and like, I don't know how to parent with the internet. Like, it wasn't a thing. Like, it's all new for me.
Yeah.
But, you know, he is being shaped on how the world works based on what he's experiencing now. And so as we grow up, when we go out into society, we graduate from school, we go get a job, we expect the people around us in that job to act a lot like what we grew up with. And when they don't, when they might say something we didn't think you're allowed to say, or do something we didn't think you're allowed to do, it kind of plays with those thoughts that we think we know about in the world. And so those are those unwritten expectations that are put upon us. You know, one example would be, you know, if you grew up in a loving, caring household where you're nice to everybody that you meet, and you go out into the world and you start meeting people that aren't nice to everyone, you're like, what's happening? Like, I'm supposed to be nice, and everybody around me is supposed to be nice, because that's what I grew up with. You know, on the flip side, somebody grows up in an angry household where, and we'll just call it, like, they grew up in a racist household. So they grew up thinking they're supposed to be racist, right? It's a learned behavior. It's not natural, but that's what they learned. So when they grow up and then somebody comes along and challenges them on their racism, they're like, but they might learn, like, yeah, my parents were wrong, and you're not a bad person because of the color of your skin. Right. And so some people do unlearn the crap that they were taught when they were kids, and some people learn new things that actually are more helpful in life. You know, and some people grow up in a loving, caring household, but it wasn't so nurturing that they went and found something else with a group of people that happened to be like a hate group. And so they go the opposite direction. So it's, you know, as we grow up, our expectations are challenged all the time, because our parents can't tell us everything we're going to experience in the world. They just can't.
Yeah, no, like, this is the thing. I think it, like, personality plays such a huge part in it. And like, this is the thing, like, when you look at a family, if they've got two kids, okay. Now, I've got to simply say this, you could have one kid, sweetness and light and all things right. And like, yeah, just like, yeah, hi, everything like this. Then you'll have another one, same household, same everything, and they are feral. that's absolutely feral. So it's, yes, like, yeah, those sort of expectations and stuff like this, it seems like it just is so complicated to sort of like, oh yes, this is your expectations, and simple learning and conditioning is going to shape that person. It might have to take a lot more sort of on the mental side to sort of like, okay, checks and balances to sort of give some equilibrium to that person. I don't know. What would you say?
It is something that has to be approached mentally. One of the things that Einstein said was that you can't solve a problem at the same level it was created. And one interpretation of that is that you can't solve an emotional problem emotionally. Mm. And so if you're ever upset because an expectation hasn't been met, you're now in an emotional state. So if you can solve it mentally by exploring it, by, you know, going through a flowchart, reading a book, then you're going to be able to solve that puzzle a lot more quickly than trying to do it with, like, you know, tears in your eyes. So, but yeah, it's interesting. If you have siblings in the same household, how come they don't grow up the same way? Because they don't have the same friends. They don't have the same schedule. The parents learn something from one child to the next and they do something different. Maybe they're trying to compensate for what they thought they did wrong, but it goes the other way. Like, it's just, there's too many factors. And I would say if you look at twins, most often twins are pretty much similar. I mean, some more often than like siblings that are 1, 2, 3 years apart. But that's because they're growing up kind of at the same level, same situations and everything like that. They do a lot of things together. Whereas siblings of different ages, they're kind of moving all over the board. So, and if one does sports and the other doesn't, that's a whole different dynamic that you're going to learn and grow from. So yeah, it's amazing what can happen just within one household. So you imagine going out into the world and mixing with people that came from the other side of town or the other side of the world. Like, you have no idea how they grew up or what they were exposed to or anything. Yeah.
Mm. I'm curious because, like, you got yourself a 12-year-old lad. Like, like, what were some of your expectations when you were a parent? Or was it just like, can I survive day one?
Although when he was a baby, it's like, all right, I'm gonna keep him alive. That's my job. I'm gonna keep him alive. You know, every day it's a new challenge. It's a new expectations get thrown out of the window all the time. You know, I think it's more that I expect from myself to be a better parent for my son than I feel like my parents were for me. Mm. I mean, I know my parents did the best job that they could at the time with the knowledge and information they had. Obviously, in today's day and age, I've got so much more information at my fingertips to solve problems than my parents ever did. I've also got a lot of bad information out there that I have to sort through. But I think that's what it comes down to for me, is I just expect myself to do the best job that I can. And sometimes I look back and be like, oh, that was a poor choice.
why is my boy looking at me like that?
Why did I let him stay up an extra hour?
You shouldn't let me watch that slasher movie. Come on.
Now he's having all the nightmares. And like, I just had him watch Goonies the other day. And I know when I was a kid, it was a great movie. And I forgot that I had nightmares when I was a kid. And he had nightmares the night that he watched it. I was like, oh, I'm so sorry, dude. But it was a great movie.
I was like, yeah, come on now. Goonies is a classic. I've got to say. Yeah, well, like the truffle shuffle. Yeah. What part did he find scary? Just out of curiosity.
I think it was the pirate ship and the bad guys, like with the swords and everything, towards the end of the movie. All the skulls and skeletons and all that stuff. So
yeah, you know what? I've got to say, the Goonies is the kids' adventure film. That, and I don't know, like Flight of the Navigator. Have you watched that?
Oh yeah, yeah, that was one of my favorites too.
So yeah, those are the two, in my opinion. I was like, yeah, kids' adventure, yeah. And the reason why I say kids' adventure, it's kids actually starring it, not like, okay, some adult coming along. Ooh, I don't know what to keep it, but still, but yeah. But yeah. So with all of this, and like, yes, parents, your expectations of parent being challenged on a constant day-to-day, like, How long did it take you to actually get this book put together? Because look, you are a person who, like, how can I put it? You didn't just do one book or two books or three. You're just one of these overachieving SOBs out there with it. How long did it take you to do this one?
This one actually took the longest out of all the ones that I've done. And the reason I say that is like, there's all these ideas that I wanted to put in the book. And it was like, I don't know the flow.
Right.
So I just kind of like put them all down on pieces of paper. I'm like, you know, general concepts. And I started moving them around like pieces of a puzzle on a table. Mm. Like, where's the picture? Where's the picture? And then, but it took me a while to get to that point. So I had written all these concepts down, but then I'm like, okay, what order? and then how do I tie it together? So it might have taken me 6 months to write this one.
Right, 6 months. Okay. Yeah. And like, how many pages in 6 months?
This one, it's 150 pages. It's a quick read.
Well for some, come on now.
It's big, giant, bold text, very well spaced.
Is that not a challenge? Like,
designed, it's designed for your grandmother with bad eyes to read it.
Fair enough. The old grandmothers out there trying to manage their expectations in life. It's in big bold text. Please go out there, read it. Read it now. Yeah. Like, it's one of those things when you kind of like, okay, you've got a flow chart to go through it all. But like trying to piece that together must be challenging because like getting from one plate, like it's one of those things which I don't feel is quite a linear thing, if you get what I mean. It's mm-hmm. not like one, like this happens and that happens and this happens, because in the time, okay, of being in the moment, there are a lot of things happening all at once. And you're just, if you're just reacting to everything going on in the now, you can't be like, okay, I see that's happening. And now I'm going to take this linear path from this point to that point to this point. It's like, okay, that's going off. So that's going off. Okay, where do I go next? What do I need to do? It's quite a sort of bouncing around thing. I see it in my head. What do you say? How do you see it?
So it is. So the flowchart is a tool that people can use in their personal growth. And personal growth is not a magic wand. It's not a flick of the switch. It's something that people have to practice on a regular basis. So if you want to be happier in life, you got to find those tools that help you be happier in life. Mm. And the first order of that is to be aware of what's going on around you. So all I've done is kind of shown people being upset is one of those times in life where you can choose to be aware. I'm upset. I know there's something else I can do now. So it's not necessarily like I'm upset, let me go through this flowchart. It's like, I'm upset. I know there's a flowchart I can work through if I want to. I know there's an option. There's a choice here. And the more that I practice, whether it's just looking at the flowchart, whether it's understanding it, whether it's using this other thing that you learned, like meditation or going on a run or, you know, whatever the tools are that you've acquired to get happy sooner, you just have to practice them over and over and over. And then it gets easier and easier. Like one of my big triggers for being upset is traffic. You know, everybody in the United States had to go take their exam. They had to pass the exam to get their driver's license. And yet it's not evident that that even works because there's plenty of people that don't seem to understand what they signed on for. And so, but is it reasonable for me to have this expectation that everybody knows how to drive? It isn't. it isn't, you know, our system is so screwed up over here. You know, we drive on the wrong side of the road, you know.
You know what? I was going to judge you for that. No. How can 360 million people be so wrong?
I think there's what, only two countries that drive on the opposite side of the road, or is it three? It's like,
I honestly couldn't tell.
I think it's the UK, Australia, and like some country in Africa, I think. Yeah.
Look, all I've got to simply say is, look, like there might be something like Yeah, 7 billion of you just on one side of the road. Yeah. That's neither here or there. Look, all I've got to simply say is we're right, and you guys will learn eventually.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, if only the United States would pick up on the metric system, man. That's my biggest issue. I'm like, the rest of the world is talking about, you know, 49 degrees Celsius temperatures, and I'm like, I don't know what that means. I looked it up. I was like, damn, that's hot.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Now, put it this way. You get, like, this is how bad it is in America when it came to NASA. It must have been about 5, maybe 6 years ago when they sent that probe up to Mars, the one they lost. And the reason why they lost that probe is one team worked in miles while the other team worked in kilometers. So when the computer program was like, okay, it didn't have a little translation bit, like, okay, if you're talking kilometers over here, that's what it is in miles. If you're talking miles, this is what it's in kilometers. It just was like, error. Pow. And it's like, and yeah, that was, I don't know how much it cost, but it was several hundred million dollars just went up in smoke. They haven't made the same mistake again.
that's not an expensive mistake you want to make twice.
Oh no, not, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's millions of kilometers away or miles, depending how you want to look at it. So yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, the UK's got a hybrid sort of system when it comes to that. It's like we play with both. It's like, yeah, just
yeah. I know Canada uses the empirical system when it comes to construction, but the metric system for everything else. It's like, why? Whatever.
I think it's just to mess with people.
Probably.
Yeah.
But yeah, so traffic's my big trigger.
Mm.
But because I know about my flowchart, because I understand these expectations, I might be upset for 5 or 10 seconds now, whereas before it would be the entire trip that I was on the road. So, you know, back to it, I'm not telling people, you know, hey, you're upset, pull out the flow chart. But if you know that it's there, if it's on the refrigerator, if it's in your cubicle at work, if it's by your laptop at home, it's kind of there in your peripheral vision. Mm. So you can use it when you need it.
Yeah. I've got to say this, like when, like with managing expectations. Okay. Now last year, like 2019 going into 2020, everyone was like, oh yeah, brand new year, brand new decade, and like, yeah, going to get things changed around, move around, yeah, bring on 2020. And like, do you think your book might have been like a little bit late for like the sort of bigger sort of management of expectations in a generation or two?
I mean, it was out before the pandemic hit, so.
Okay. Yeah.
It just, you know, it's not on the bestseller list everywhere. So. But yes, if I think if a lot of people had known about this book and had been looking at it during the pandemic, and during this time, things might have been a little bit different.
Might have. Like people may have been a little bit more controlled, a little bit more measured. Like
a little bit.
Yeah. Well, at least there wasn't any traffic for a good like chunk of time.
Seriously, April of 2020, I just got in my car and drove around because there was nobody out there. I was like, this is awesome.
Oh, I love it. Now, this is the thing. Okay, you're an author of 6 books. Okay, now what made you like, what was the thing, what was the spark to get you writing first of all? Because like, one, okay, everyone's got a book in them, they say, but to write 6, that is something different right there.
Yeah, so the first book is Living Unscripted, and I kind of talked about it before where I teach improv for life. Yeah. And that was kind of the reason for the book, was that people seem to trust authors more than people who don't write their book. So it's like sort of a tool of the trade of like, hey, look, I'm an author. I must know what I'm talking about because I wrote it down in a book, right? And so, but at the same time, you know, people have read it and they absolutely love it. And they they're able to utilize it. And it's a different way of looking at personal growth. Mm. And, you know, there are so many personal growth gurus out there. And, you know, Tony Robbins is known probably around the world. Yeah. Some people absolutely love him and some people can't stand him. But if there's another guy over here that you do resonate with, go learn from that guy or that woman or that kid. I mean, whoever, like, go learn from somebody. And if somebody just happens to pick up my book and it resonates with them, then great.
Yeah. So what would you say was the sort of biggest lesson you learned when you first did your first book?
Well, I've been doing improv for a long time. And when I decided to start teaching it, it was kind of like, well, this is the class I'm going to teach. This is how I'm going to teach it.
Yeah.
I just kind of went over the rules of improv and how they apply to life and everything. And so it was really easy to write this book because I was basically taking that class and just putting it into a different format so people can kind of read it and understand it.
Okay.
So that book, I wrote the first draft in about a week.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. I hammering it out because like, this is the thing like, okay. Yeah. Teaching it, like teaching improv and like going through the sort of day-to-day motions of something you do on a regular basis. Like I always find if I have to write something down, there is like sort of little things, little nuggets, which come out, which I never like, because it's sort of mostly autopilot that you have to sort of like go, wait a second. Instead of like, I need to sort of break it down. It's like, okay, that's kind of the linchpin of this. And it can expand from there. Did you have a moment like that?
Not for this one. This one was just, literally I just started typing and it was just like flowing out of me. And I can't explain it. It was just like, I was just this funnel for getting this information out. And it was just super fast, super easy. Now, I'll let you guys in on a secret. I'm writing my first sci-fi novel, and I am basically randomly getting thoughts about this book. And what I do is I just write them down and say, yeah, I want to include that in the book, or yeah, that's a great idea. And so I think I have like 50 pages done. And this is bigger text and longer form, so it might break down to 100 when you reformat it, but I still have like, I don't know, 75% of the book to write still. Just based off all the ideas that I've come out and say, like, I want to accomplish this and this and this, and, like, yeah. I know how the book ends finally, but at the same time, writing a fictional book is kind of like doing improv, because you don't really know where things are going and you just sort of play with it, and it's already taken turns and twists I didn't even realize it was going to take, and I'm the one writing it. It's kind of fun because it's almost like your own choose your own adventure book.
Outstanding. So why sci-fi for your sort of nonfiction piece?
I was divorced about 6 years ago, and during that kind of downtime I started getting into reading, and I read The Martian by Andy Weir before it became a movie.
Yes.
And I absolutely just fell in love with it. I couldn't put the thing down. And I was like, okay, I didn't think I liked reading, but this book was awesome. So I went back to the bookstore and I went back to the sci-fi section and I started just kind of looking through, and somebody said, hey, you should read that one. I was like, all right, I'll read that one. And I just sort of dove down this hole of reading tons of sci-fi books. And, I think I didn't like reading in the past because I wasn't reading the stuff that I wanted to be reading. I was reading stuff that people said I should read. And I'm like, no. So I really got into sci-fi. And as I kept going along, I'm like, maybe I can write a sci-fi book. I mean, I wrote these other books, you know? So my brain just sort of went into work behind the scenes mode for about 6 months. And every now and then I would get an idea for a book. I'd write it down. But nothing really kind of was like, yes, do this one. Mm. And I was driving down the road and I saw a tree and I was like, wonder if wormholes are like trees where there's a bunch of branches off of them and you have to go down the right one to get to where you want to go. And what if you take a wrong turn? Ooh, the wrong turn. So I'm writing a sci-fi book in space and it's the wrong turn. And yeah, so it's going to be good.
You remember that old TV show called Sliders?
Yeah.
Yeah, so is it going to be kind of Sliders in space, kind of?
No, it's definitely different, but
He's like clawing around for a little bit of information, get a little bit of insight into what it might be. Okay, cards close to your chest. I know that. I see that. No problem. I've got to say, when it comes to sci-fi, I do love a bit of sci-fi myself. I have not read the books, but I love the TV show. Have you watched The Expanse by any chance?
Yes, I actually started reading. I think I read the first book. And then realized that it had come out on Amazon Prime for, you know, The Expanse. And I was like, well, I could keep reading or I could just watch it. It's just, I went and started watching it. Now, granted, it's just like every other sci-fi novel turned TV or movie. It's not the same story. It's close, but it's still different. I've been loving it. I think the last season that came out, I think I watched it over like 2 days. Come on, produce them faster, please.
Yeah, no, put it this way. My lady, she hates watching TV with me because the reason why, I will sit her down and like I would press play on the Netflix show and I would like look at her and that's why I go, yeah, okay, in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and she's in. And that's what I did with The Expanse. I watched it like a long time ago when it was on the Sci-Fi channel, then it disappeared, then came to Netflix, disappeared again, and now it's on like Amazon. And like it was like, yeah, on Amazon, I was like, okay, yeah, put it on. It's like, yeah, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and she looked at me like, you bastard. It's like, this is another thing you've got me into. That's like, and she was in. I got to love that whole sort of build, the world building, this sort of geopolitics what go on, and like, yeah, how society splits and divides and like how identities are formed. Like, yeah, got to say with Mars, how that sort of colony was like, this is our identity and this is what drives us forward and how it goes from there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So if you were in a faction on The Expanse, which faction would you be in?
That's a tough one because I want to be out in space, but I know I'd probably be an earther. I don't think I would be maybe I'd be on Mars. I think I could be I could be from the Mars side of things. I don't think I would be a belter. That's not, and I only say this because I just kind of think of like how I grew up and the world that I've been in. I was like, well, yeah, I'd either be an earther or a Martian, you know. So
earther.
Earther. Yeah, one of the earthers.
use twice as much oxygen. As I burn up.
Exactly.
Not the earthers. I'm not sort of there with you as well. Just like, yeah. It's like I'm keep that space stuff to there. Interesting. So with all of this, like, yeah, how did you get into speaking?
That really comes down to the improv that I do. I'm with an improv troupe. I've been performing with them for over a decade. And I've kind of become the MC of the group. So when we do a show, I'm usually the one that introduces everybody. And I love being up on stage. I have no fear. You know, as long as I know what I'm talking about, I can be up on stage all day long.
So 10 years of improv. Like, did you just watch Whose Line Is It Anyway and went, you know what, I want to do some of that?
I think I watched an improv show before that was kind of big here in the States.
Okay.
So it was a live performance and they would say, you know, hey, come take classes. And I never thought I was smart enough or funny enough or fast enough or, you know, every reason why not. And then I finally had a girlfriend and she went and took a class and I went with her and I just fell in love with it. You know, the first thing the guy says when we get there is like, if you follow the rules of improv. Oh, by the way, there are rules to improv. If you follow those rules, you'll be successful. If you don't, you're not going to have a good time. And I was just like, okay, I can follow some rules. Talk to me about these rules. And from there, I just, it was easy. It was easy. It was fun. And I took to it so, so well. And I think it's the only place in my life where I truly feel free to do and be however I want. And there's no judgment. You know, if people are watching an improv show, if you fall flat on your face, you still have the respect of getting out there and trying. If you're brilliant and hilarious just because you followed the rules of improv, people are like, oh, how did you do that? Right? They're in awe. But there's no like, you're an idiot, you're a moron, you suck, like I hate you. But, you know, I have so much fun. I'm so free when I get out on that stage and just play. Just play.
Right. Is it like with your improv troupe, I should say, like how many people are in the group?
I think right now there are 7 of us. I think when I joined on the group, there were 4 others. Oh. And, you know, we've had people come and go over the years. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
My God.
But everybody who comes in, they know the rules of improv and they abide by them and it all just works out.
Okay, that's great. And you turned this into a successful business.
Yeah. You know, once I realized that improv is used every moment of every day of our lives and the same rules that apply for stage improv apply for life, it was an easy transition to say, hey, I can teach this to people. I can go into companies and teach team building. I can make the corporate culture so much better and lighter and more fun just by teaching improv.
So what are the rules of improv, or are they or are they under lock and key, and like if you do tell me, you would have to come over here and like take me out? The first rule of improv is not to talk about improv.
There's so many books on improv, and even if I said they were a secret, I would be lying. The most common rule that people know or have heard in the past is yes and. Now I call that my second rule of improv, and I'll get to that in a second. But the biggest rule when people say, yeah, I knew there were rules to improv, isn't it like yes something, yes and? And I'm like, yeah, it's yes and. The rule of yes and really comes down to accepting what is and adding to it. So if like two people walk out on stage, let's just say two guys walk out on stage and one says, hey, mom, how are you? The other guy has to say, yes, I'm mom. And they have to add to the scene so that the scene has a place to go. So if that guy says, okay, yes, I'm mom. Don't hi, mommy. You spilled paint in the garage. Okay. So they accepted that they were mom and they added some drama. They said, you know, you spilled paint in the garage. So now, because this person and said hi mom, they kind of made themselves the kid, the mom is the mom, they added to the scene, and now we can see where this is going to go. There's gonna be like, why did you spill the paint in the garage? Who's going to clean it up? Your dad's coming home soon. Like, it, there's so many possibilities for where that scene can go. But on the flip side, if it's a no but, guy walks out and says, hi mom, how are you? I'm not your mom, I'm your brother. Well, nobody knows what's going on. The actors are confused. The audience is confused. You know, and if we look at the world today around us, especially here in the United States, how many people are walking out there saying like, there's no COVID. You know, you're the problem with the world right now. Like, you're the reason that COVID keeps going on, because you're out there pretending it's not. Rather than saying, yeah, there's COVID and let me wear a mask and do my part. You know, we all move ahead if we all do our part. But, you know, when you fight the grain and make it hard for everybody around you, it just creates conflict, and nobody likes conflict. We all try to avoid it.
Well, I would say most sane people try to avoid.
Yes. Most sane people. I think that's the key word there, is sane.
Yes.
Yeah. So the rule of yes and is really just accepting where we are in our present life and then choosing what we want to do with it. So if that's, you know, I don't have the money that I want in my bank account. Okay. If you accept that's where you are, then you can choose to save. You can choose to get a new job. You can choose to get a side job. You can choose to do something about it. But if you deny the fact that you don't have the money you want in your bank account and you go spend it on, you know, that thing you didn't need or the food going out or whatever it might be, well, you're just making the situation worse rather than better. If you don't have that relationship you want, you know, and you're like, I like her, but she's not what I want, but I'm too lazy to go figure it out. Well, now you're not going to be happy. After a while, you're just not gonna be happy. But if you're like, yeah, she's not who I want, and I know there are other women out there, I'm going to keep looking. Then, you know, you're kind of moving in the direction you want. So it works on relationships. It works on, you know, money, spirituality. It works everywhere. You know, but, you know, anybody that goes to a psychiatrist or a psychologist or a therapist, you know, you have to accept where you are and what's going on before you can do anything else. Anybody that's been in like Alcoholics Anonymous or something like that, or they're in recovery, they have to accept that they have a problem before they can get better. You know, if whatever it might be. So yes, and is a very, very important rule in life in general, but definitely in stage improv. Cause you know, one of the things that happened to me once is we brought some volunteers up on stage and, you know, we're doing improv, we're acting, right? It's pretend. And whatever the scene called for, I looked over at this woman who was volunteering and I said, you know, I got down on my knee and I was like, will you marry me? Right. Cause that's what the scene called for. And she's like, she completely did a no, but she didn't accept the, like, as it was going, but she's like, I'm already married. And she clearly was, she had a ring on her finger. She was sitting next to her husband in the audience. Like, obviously she was married. Right. But we're on stage, we're pretending. And so she denied it. She said no, because she's already married. Like she totally went the opposite direction. The good thing is I was aware enough to recognize it. And I was like, how could you not have told me? Right. I recovered from the scene. And I was like, okay, she's denying me. And what can I do with that? So I was able to turn it around because I knew and understood the rules and I'd practiced them for so long.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just, it's hilarious when, you know, if you understand the rules and you go out in the world and nobody else is doing it, you're just kind of laughing at what people are doing because you're like, this, you're an idiot. You know, it's like you just laugh it off at people because you see how much easier it could be for them if they just understood this one little concept in life and it would change everything for them. Yeah. So,
no, like this is the thing. I think with regards to like many a person who can't actually sort of comprehend that little rule to make their lives a little bit easier or to make life easier for others is the fact that I think too many people have sort of get too ingrained in just their ideal, like their ideals or their sort of like, yeah, stonewall thinking. And with that, it just shuts everything down. And I know we're in America and, well, I would say frig, like in most of the Western world, this has been kind of like more and more people are getting a little bit more and more ingrained and not having those like important conversations, those moments where, yes, going and yes, or yes, and to make things better. Because like the whole thing about life itself, like through conversations, many ideas formulate, and they evolve and either get stronger because they're good ideas or they evolve and die. But these conversations are not being had anymore. I'd say if they are being had, there are some times where it comes to some subject matters out there, which let's just say if you're not like financially secure and like, yeah, have everything in your life kind of like Fort Knox, you might be asking for some certain degrees of trouble out there, if you get what I mean. Mm-hmm. You don't need to say anything, just treat it like Voldemort and don't say it, out loud. but I think without the power of conversation, without like being able to come to the to the table and talk, to like improv a better life. And like when someone goes improv a better life, because you can't really say it's, you can plan everything out and you've got to sometimes do things on the fly more times than we like to admit. But
yeah, life changes constantly. Like to be so set in your ways that you can't account for change that's unreasonable in life. Like, things change, period. End of 2019, who would have thought we would be where we are today?
Yeah.
Nobody. 5 years ago, nobody. Nobody on this planet said we were going to be in a pandemic, locked down. We're going to lose, you know, a million people around the world, or however many millions of people we've lost around the world. I'm blanking on the numbers, but you know, we've lost so many people around the world. Nobody saw this coming. You know, maybe there were a few like pandemic experts that were like, yeah, it's coming. But most people never saw this coming, and they haven't been able to adapt to the change because they are, as you said, so set in their ways and their thoughts. And that's just not how the world works.
Yeah. And like, this is the thing. If you said this to anyone and went, yeah, 5 years ago, go, yeah, look, global pandemic, 80% of all businesses will be shut down, locked down. And like, yeah, everyone will be staying at home, like working from home. People will be furloughed, people lose their jobs, everything like this. You'll be treated like Cassandra, like basically just like you're speaking the truth, but no one actually listens to like your prophecies for the future, because no one can see it, no one can believe it. It is mental, but it is real, as they say. Life is much stranger than fiction, as they say. Like when everyone was doing that mass watching of Contagion, when that came out, it's like, oh, Contagion. I don't know if you watched it as well, but yeah. It's like, I don't know why anyone wants to watch a film about a global pandemic in a global pandemic.
It's what we do as people, though, for some reason.
Crazy biscuits, but still, as I got knocked, it's like, do you want to watch Contagion or do you want to watch Tiger King? I'll put on Tiger King, please. But like, the whole thing is like, a lot has changed. And I think with regards to people's sort of expectations for the future, I don't know how people are going to kind of measure that type of expectations. Like, this might be going against the whole sort of philosophy of your book, say, but like, yeah, what do you think some of your expectations might be for your future, say, in the next 3 to 5 years?
Well, you could easily say that setting a goal is setting an expectation. I mean, that they're, it's the same thing. I have a goal of making $1 million in 5 years. Well, you kind of have to take a step back and say, well, what's the most amount of money you've ever made in a year? And if it's less than 100,000, getting to a million is not, you know, in the realm of impossible, but, you know, take it a step back. Maybe your next goal should be 200,000, like maybe double it in 5 years. You know, something that's a little more reasonable. Because otherwise, all you're doing is you're kind of setting yourself up for a future upset of, oh, it's been 5 years. I totally thought I was going to get $1 million by then. And now you don't. So now you're upset that you set this goal. And why bother setting goals, right?
Yeah.
And that's one of my biggest issues with goals, is that if you set them too low and you're always getting them, then why set them? Because you're always getting them. But if you set them too high and you're never getting them, why set them? Because you never get them. So there's this wonderful middle ground where you have to challenge yourself, but not so much that you don't get your goals, because you want to win in such a way that you want to keep setting goals. And that's anybody that tells you to do like a SMART goal, where it's attainable, but it's also got to be a risk. You know, there's the A and the R in there. It's got to be a risk so that the reward is that much better. But it's got to be an attainable reward, you know, because if you're working at McDonald's, are you going to make $1 million? No, not unless you're like, are doing some side gig, building the next super app that comes out on a phone. In all likelihood, if you can code, you're not going to be working at McDonald's, or you just haven't been looking at job boards, because software development is huge. You can have whatever job you want. But anyway, like that's the point, though, is like, you kind of, again, you have to look at where you are before you can go with where you want to be. Mm-hmm. You have to do that. Yes. And I am the most I've ever made in a year is 50,000. So am I going to make a million next year? It's possible, just not likely. You know, if you've lived 20 years never making more than 50,000, you're not going to immediately jump to a million the next year. And if you do, you came up with a great idea, or you came up with an awesome book that just happens to go viral and boom, you're a millionaire. Yay, you know. But that's a rarity. That's not what happens on an every in the world every day. I'm sure there are 100,000 new books a day on Amazon right now. Maybe 10,000, 20,000, but it'd probably be fair to say there's 100,000 new books a day on Amazon. Out of those, how many are going to be, you know, a New York Times bestseller? I don't know. I'm going to say most of them are not ever going to be seen by more than like two or three people. Mm. You know, and that's the beauty and the curse of Amazon. Like anybody, you could take your Word document, you can type up three pages, you can upload it to Amazon, and now you have a book. You're published. Is anybody going to read it? Are you going to get good reviews? No. I mean, you might just from being the craziest thing that Amazon has ever seen, but that's the point, is a lot of people are producing books that are not going to, they're just not going to go anywhere. Mm. You know, nobody wants that to be the case. They all want their books to succeed. They all want to be the next J.K. Rowling. Like, let's just be honest. Who doesn't want to be her?
Well, be careful which crowds of people you say that to, because they're like,
Yeah. But anybody who writes a book, they want to be a super successful author that everybody knows. And they're a rare, rare breed. You know, there's some amazing authors out there that they've written books for decades and they're just finally starting to get notoriety. They're finally starting to have their books seen by the film industry. And that, you know, that's kind of one of those things where it's like, which one gets all the book sales? Is it the film industry that kind of launches the book sales, or is the book sales just kind of have to reach a certain point before the film industry jumps in and says, yeah, we need to capitalize on this? Mm. It's tough to say. And it sometimes goes two directions. But yeah, it's, you know, life changes. You got to know where you are before you can get where you want to go.
So would you say you measure your success in books at all? Or do you just like, you're happy they're out there living in the wild?
You know, it was great. Somebody asked me a question once, like, you know, the question of, if you died tomorrow, you know, what would you regret? Or would you have regrets, or, you know, something like that?
Yeah.
And it was fun to actually say, you know what? I have my words out in a book. I have paper books that are out there. I know some of them are in libraries. I think my expectation book is in the Library of Congress in the United States.
I made it into the Library of Congress. Well done. Congratulations.
Well, anybody can do that if you know, you just submit it and pay money.
Okay.
Yeah, it's nothing special. You have to do the jump through the hoops to get it done. But if I died tomorrow, my words are out there forever. Mm. They will forever be out there. Yeah. And I think that's a really cool legacy to leave behind. Like, you know, if it takes 1,000 years and then all of a sudden my book is relevant and people love it, great. You know, if it catches on next week and I'm selling millions of copies and I'm talking all over the world, great. But if I die tomorrow, the fact that I have these out there, you know, I'm happy that it is. You know, if I get book sales, great. If I can change somebody's life or help somebody change their life so that they're just a little bit more at peace in their everyday life, or they're just a little bit happier, I think I did my job.
I like that. I really do. Because like, Les Brown, motivational speaker, I might butcher this, hopefully not. But one of the things he says, for one of his quotes, basically you're laying there on your deathbed, and then with angry eyes, yes, the hopes and dreams which you could have put like changes into the world, stand out there looking at you going, you were the only person who could have brought these hopes, dreams to life. But you didn't. And like you like coming out with your books, it's like, yes. Like when you, I'm not wishing you harm or anything, but if it, when that day, many, 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 many moons from now, centuries from now, like come, like, yeah, that, yes, you'll just have nothing but family and friends, like wishing you on, and not the angry faces of dreams which have been lost and forgotten.
Exactly. You know, and I at least have the awareness to know that, you know, yeah, there's some things I haven't done in life yet that I want to accomplish. And if I don't, you know, will I regret that? Yes and no. Yes, and that I haven't done it. And no, because I recognize that I haven't done it. So I only have myself to blame. Mm-hmm. Exactly like Les Brown says, is like, if I'm not doing it, then I only have myself to blame. And I'm choosing not to. So therefore, it's a choice. So can we all accomplish every dream that we've ever wanted in one day? No. Got to take steps and do it over time. So, you know, one of my favorite things to do is act. And I was about to act in a local play here in April of 2020. And we were just getting into like rehearsal and figuring out where we stand on stage and all that stuff. And then it's like lockdown. So we finally got word that we're going to start rehearsing again. We're going to start memorizing our lines again and possibly do this play in November. Hmm. So I'm excited. I was like, I enjoy acting and I'm excited to do this. So I'm not a Hollywood star yet. Will I get there? Maybe. I think it would be fun.
I'm sure it would be. I'm sure it would be. So, okay. I have to ask. So if there was one role you could play, like in TV, film, or on stage, what would that role be?
You know, it's funny. When I first read The Martian, I wanted to be Mark Watney on Mars. And I'm going to say Matt Damon did a way better job than I ever would have. So
you don't know that? You don't know?
Come it's on, true, Matt. I don't. But, you know, the success of the movie, half of it was, I want to go watch Matt Damon perform and act, you know. So, but I would have loved to have been in that movie. I would have played just about any role. Like, yeah. That would have been so much fun to be in. Yeah. But it was funny as I was reading The Martian, I was like, I could totally be Mark Watney. It's totally my style of humor. You know, I kind of feel like there was a lot more humor in the book than there was in the movie. They did translate some of it, but it was Andy Weir is a great author. He's written two other books and they're both just amazing. So I can't wait till their movies. Cause you know, you take one author movie and make it good, you're going to go after the others as well. So maybe I'll get into one of those.
I'm sure you will. I'm sure you will.
Go tell all the Hollywood people that I'm ready. Well,
like, don't worry. Like when I go along for the like quarterly meeting, towards the end of this year, I'll put in a good word for you. That's like, yeah.
Appreciate it.
All right. Yeah. Ben. Winter author.
Yeah, side part, you know, whatever. Get him in there somehow. Speaking role.
Yeah, does improv and he is an actor as well. Should get him in. It's like yeah. That's like, yeah, he can beat Matt Damon. He can beat Matt Damon like in The Martian. So yeah.
It's doing acting off or act off. I don't know how that would be, like a dance off, but with acting. I think they call those auditions.
Well, yes. I have to ask this, one of the final questions I will ask you. Now, okay. Now, you know the Muppet Show?
Know it well? Of course.
Okay, great. Okay, now, think of a film, your favorite film. Now, if you could have, and it can't be the Martian because no, if you could replace the whole cast with Muppets, except one actor in that film, which film would that be?
Wow, that is a good question. I think the problem is I've seen too many movies.
I've seen one or two.
Yeah. Well, my brain's working on it. You've had time to think about this question. What's the movie that comes to mind for you?
Now,
I won't choose the same one, I promise.
Like, it can change from like film to film, but like if I was, let's see, like one of the ones what came to mind, I don't know if you've seen a film called The Raid.
No.
Like basically, The Raid is a Taiwanese like martial arts film where a elite police squad goes into a building which is controlled by a criminal gang. They get into the building, but getting out is a totally different story. Now, if you like martial arts, you need to watch The Raid and The Raid 2, because do you like John Wick?
Yeah.
Okay. Basically, all I've got to say is some of the fight scenes in this will blow your mind. Have you seen a film called, is it 20 Miles? Mark Wahlberg plays some type of CIA agent, and he's trying to get an asset from the embassy to a plane.
I feel like I should have. I'm blanking on it though.
Okay. But yes, I would have replaced all of the sort of gangsters with Muppets, and then basically while the martial arts is going on, I'll have the main guy as a human being, beating the living daylights out of Muppets, flying all over the place, arms being torn off. It would be a felt massacre. Flying left, right, and center.
That's awesome. Okay, yeah. I can see why action would be fun that way, for sure. Honestly, the first movie that popped into my brain right after I asked you was Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Would you still have Pee-wee Herman as Pee-wee, or would you replace him with someone else?
I think I would keep Dottie the same, but everybody, even Pee-wee would be a Muppet. Everybody else would be a Muppet, but Dottie would be the only human.
Okay. Interesting. Which Muppet would be Pee-wee Herman? I have to ask.
It'd be the Swedish Chef.
Swedish Chef.
Exactly.
Oh my god. Okay. Fair enough.
Chickens. Instead of the bike, he's looking for his saucepan.
It's
saucepan.
A bike. No. Oh, saucepan. Oh, sorry. Is that okay? Pretty mental. I like it.
That's a good exercise. Well, that's fun.
Who says I don't challenge you mentally? But still, would you be able to tell the lovely people out there how they'll be able to find you on the big wide web?
Absolutely. So the best way to get to me, to get to the flowchart, is to go to havingexpectations.com. Just havingexpectations.com. Easy enough. The flowchart's free. Download it, print it out, put it up everywhere. Just remind yourself that there's a choice you can make when you get upset.
Excellent. What I'll also do, I'll put his links in the description, in the show notes, so you can track him down. Yes, wherever he is. But soon, coming to a movie theater stage, or doing an improv show near you. But yes, let me just say this, Ben, you have been an absolute pleasure, a star to have on today.
It's been great. You're an amazing host. I love it.
What can I say? I would send you a check and it will bounce. But like, no, I can't. I'm not going to do that. No. Just like, yeah, just like you'll have a promise of a check sometime in the near future.
Okay. Good to know.
Many moons from now. thank you, Ben. And I'd like to say thank you to you, my friends, my life warriors, for staying and listening to the podcast up to this point. I'd like to say stay well, stay safe, be awesome, be excellent, be fantastic, be all the beaties you can be in this world, which are positive. I messed that last bit up, but no one knew that. I can keep on going. Have a great day, guys. Bye-bye. Yes. Peace. And we are.